Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. We have a great show today, and I'm really excited to get it to you. My name is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. In April 2009, today's guest graduated from the MBA program at Pepperdine University. After realizing that all he got for that education was a couple pieces of paper and a bill that shows up every month, he decided it was time for a different kind of education and started a blog called The School of Life, where he wrote about the things you should have learned in school but never did. This later evolved into him becoming the co-host founder of a podcast called Blogcast FM, and later pioneers within the podcasting space. He is now the current host of the hit podcast Unmistakable Creative. This interview is short but powerful. Now, let's hack Srini Rao. All right, welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. Today we have another very, very special guest. Welcome to the show, Srini.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So let's jump right into this. Srini, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me specifically what you do that you think other people don't, that has been a big contributor to your successes so far?
That's a tough one. Yeah, actually, I'll give you one. I don't look at what other people are doing as sort of my guide for what to do, because I think that that's where we run into this issue of mimicry and where people are creating the same thing over and over again. You see, the problem with best practices is we treat them as a map instead of as a compass, and the result then is that you kind of basically suck the originality out of your own work. You mentioned that we both got connected by way of Julian Smith. And, you know, one of the things I found really interesting about Julian, who has probably one of the most widely read blogs on the internet, when I had spoken to him about it, he said he doesn't read blogs, which I thought was pretty hilarious, but at the same time, actually very telling, because he's pulling from different disciplines and art forms. Like, I'll give you another example. If I wanted to plan a conference, I wouldn't look at how conferences are planned. I would look at how live entertainment is planned. I would look at, shows, and I would look at comedians, because comedians have much more engaged audiences than conference organizers do. And I can't take credit for that either. A guy named Eric Wall, who's an incredible graffiti artist, really gave me insight into this. But I would say that I tend to look outside of what I know for my influences, I think, which is really what has helped me develop something distinctive.
Do you do that so that you can be just like thinking, I know you're big into mm-hmm. the like embracing your inner misfit and stuff. And tell me how or when you realized you were an entrepreneur.
It's because I really struggled with day jobs. I mean, I've been let go from most of them. And it was basically, I think, probably around 2009, post-business school, I started dabbling. I mean, at that point, I didn't really see myself as an entrepreneur as much as I did somebody who was just creating things on the internet. Probably, right around 2012, when I saw that the chance of me going to a day job had pretty much, sailed, that ship sailed, and I knew that I'd reached sort of a point of no return, I started realizing, okay, I've created something that is of value to plenty of people, and it really is there's an opportunity here that I wouldn't get in a normal environment, so I have to take advantage of it. So I think in many ways I ended up here accidentally, and I've been sort of fortunate that things have gone the way they have. But it's of course a roller coaster ride. It hasn't always been easy, and it's still not easy. I mean, we still have a lot of work to do. It's still a lot of hard work, and we're here 5 years later, and in a lot of ways truth be told, we're still at the very beginning, and this is the start of something much bigger than what we originally started with. So I think it's been sort of an iterative process to discover it. And I think that this is where a lot of people get trapped, is they think they have to know how to get from A to B. Like if you were driving from LA to New York and you needed all the lights to be green, well, then you would never leave LA. And that's sort of an analogy that somebody gave me once about just life in general. So I think it really, for me, has been an iterative process of discovering what I'm good at, you know, what I'm not good at, which I've discovered plenty of as well. And that's kind of how we've ended up here.
Well, I find it interesting how you say you didn't even consider yourself an entrepreneur. So this point of no return, you graduate from, you get an MBA in 2009. How then do you all of a sudden feel like you have a point of no return where you have to, like, can't get a job? That seems like what you go to get an MBA is to get a job, right? To get a good job somewhere.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing you got to realize is also I graduated at a time when the economy was in shambles. This was April 2009, when, you know, the job market was worse than it's ever been. They called it the worst recession in history. But the reality is we've never really recovered from that. I mean, the way we find work fundamentally changed after that. You know, that's why when people ask me now, should I go get an MBA? I'm saying, I usually say no, it's a huge waste of time and money. Because the thing is, everything you learn in business school, you could learn by reading a few books. Like, you don't go to business school to learn how to build a business. You go to business school to work in somebody else's. The thing is, yes, in those days, 2006, 2007, the notion was, okay, if I get an MBA, it's going to lead to a better job, a better life, whatever it is, right? We have this sort of, you know, there's an input that results in a certain output. And what happened is that the input stopped resulting in that output and the world just fundamentally changed forever. So I think that that's really kind of what caused me to end up on this path. Was really a lack of choices. I didn't have any other alternative. Again, you know, it was all accidental. I mean, bit by bit and very iterative, but that's really kind of how we got here.
So let's move on to doubts and fears. Mm-hmm. One of our biggest doubts or fears is of being wrong as entrepreneurs or even as humans, right? And not knowing the answer to something. Can you tell us what your biggest doubt or fear on a new project or a project you're currently in the middle of, what that fear has been?
It's not necessarily the project will fail or that it won't get shipped, but it's that it won't be as well received by, you know, the audience as I would like it to be. Because each one of these, you know, you go into this with the idea that, okay, it's got to be the best thing I've ever made. But, you know, Seth Godin once told me, he said, I asked him, I was like, how do you do all these crazy projects? You know, I mean, things that just come out of thin air. And he says, you know, I always say to myself before I start anything, this might not work. So that really, I mean, that's kind of always going to be there. But the problem is that some people get so mired in that they don't do anything. And for me, I think the fortunate thing I've always had is a bias towards action and dealing with the consequences afterwards. I've had a lot of sort of failures on the web that nobody's ever seen because they were just disasters. They were small enough disasters that they're kind of, you know, somewhere on the internet if you do some searching for them. But as far as fear goes when it comes to projects, I think more than anything is that, you know, everything we create is intended for another person in a lot of ways. I mean, yeah. And the thing is, I think you have to create for yourself, but also keep in mind that somebody else is going to receive it. And so I always look at it as, okay, it's got to turn me on. If I'm not turned on by it, then there's no way anybody else will be.
So you typically don't have fears in the middle of the project. You just have a fear that it's not well received. How do you decide even what a project is at this point that you should take on, either in your business or a completely new project yourself?
The thing is that what I look at is really the opportunity for learning and growth in every single project. And I'll give you an example. We're in the process of launching a third book. And, you know, I've done two self-published books on Amazon. One hit the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. And of course, the other one did fairly well as well. And, you know, we could go down that route, self-publish a book again, do everything that we've done the first time. And some of it will work, some of it won't. But, you know, my thought was this time, why not do Kickstarter and crowdfund the next book? And somebody asked, well, why would you do that if you already have the platform that you could easily sell, you know, the book after creating it? And part of the sort of thought process behind that is that, well, I don't know anything about crowdfunding And learning about crowdfunding would be an incredibly useful skill to add to my sort of arsenal of things that I've learned, because it may not be the last project I've crowdfunded. You know, like last year we did an event. I didn't know anything about events until then. And now I have a wealth of knowledge about events that I wouldn't have otherwise had if I hadn't done an event. So I think about projects really, that becomes sort of the first filter is what can I learn and how can I expand, you know, my personal skill set and a knowledge base by doing a particular creative project. And then, you know, you also look at, okay, is there potential to make money here? Because there's plenty of creative projects that don't make any money, and there's nothing wrong with that. But at the end of the day, if you're running a business, you ideally want to turn a profit, or at least you don't want to lose money, you know, if you're doing these things. So that's kind of the way that I look at it.
Since we're on fears, I have this fear that was instilled in me in Mexico about 10 years ago now of surfing, because I spent 3 months there and I did some surfing, but it was just, I'm from the middle of the continent, right? I'm very land bound person. The ocean still amazes me and it's wondrous. And I know you surf. So, and I'm pretty sure you're really, really passionate about surfing. And unless I'm wrong, have you ever done a project based around surfing, or have you ever thought of it?
I haven't, and it's a good question, one that's come up quite a few times, and I would like to. I'm just trying to think of what it is. I've had a lot of ideas around it that just don't seem to fit. Like, I'm trying to find something that still is in line with the overall mission of what we're doing as a company. And again, you know, and sometimes it may be a purely, you know, selfish surf related project, but, I mean, surfing makes its way into everything I do some way or another. I mean, if I give a talk, there'll be analogies from surfing. If I write a book, I'll incorporate lessons from the water, but yeah, I haven't had any creative projects yet related to it.
Where's the best surfing spot you've found?
There's an entire planet to surf, so that's a hard one. But I mean, for me, fortunately, the place I would say Costa Rica probably has the best surfing I've discovered.
Can we move on to your habits? You seem like a guy who, I mean, you're the CEO of Unmistakable Media now. You have the podcast. You speak. You are writing books. Can you walk us through a morning routine of a workday, say the first 30 minutes of your workday?
Yeah, absolutely. The first 30 minutes might actually surprise you. I don't even turn on the computer for the first hour of the day. I usually just get up and read. I'll find a book and I will just read for a half hour to 45 minutes. And then after that, I'll write for about 30 minutes. And then I get into sort of, you know, looking through, you know, what's going on in the world, reading anything, you know, media or news wise that looks worthy, or any of the blogs that I read. And then, you know, kind of look at what is my, you know, sort of to-do list for the day look like. And, you know, it's interesting because more and more we're getting away from sort of just like now, you know, that I've brought on a team member, things are changing pretty rapidly. So that I'm not, the problem is that, you know, a lot of us do things we're not good at, and then we wonder why we're not making progress. And that to me is really the curse. But my daily routine literally is get up in the morning, read for 35, 40 minutes, because I think reading is actually one of the most, like, people who say they don't have time to read books, to me, that's really the perfect time. Wake up in the morning before everybody else in the house is up. And just read, because that's also when it's quiet. That's also when the rest of the world is not, you know, buzzing your phone or whatever it is. And you know, so I have no devices first thing in the morning. That's kind of my rule.
That's impressive. Do you have something you're reading right now or recently that's really inspired you?
Yeah, there's a book. Well, let's see. I've read a couple of books in the last week. I read Biz Stone's book, Things Little Birdie Told Me, which was really good. And there's a book literally here on the table next to me called The 80-20 Principle, which I'm just kind of digging through. I mean, I'm not reading it cover to cover. But I'm reading through the parts that are really interesting to me. And then, let's see, I read Remote by the guys at 37 Signals. So yeah, I mean, I'm always trying to read something.
And you say you write for say 30 minutes, is that always to publish, or do you just need to write, get out a certain amount of words?
No, I just write, you know, I try to do 1,000 words. I don't always do 1,000 words. I mean, that's another Julian Smith habit, believe it or not, is that, yeah, I mean, and that's useful. And you know, and I don't try to make the words good. I just try to write them. That's the real key. And in the 1,000 words, maybe you'll find 100 or 200 that are gold, and you can kind of take that 100 or 200 and you can expand on it. But yeah, that's really kind of the morning routine for me.
Is there a habit you are trying to develop into your life, but you're struggling right now to adopt it?
Not particularly. I mean, I'm pretty good about sticking to habits. Once I have a habit, it kind of sticks. I mean, I surf pretty much. I tried to surf daily. You know, actually, if there's anything I would say, I wanted to start doing yoga, but it just, I don't find it as interesting as I hoped I would. But I do, the thing is, I like what I feel like afterwards. And I think that's part of, you know, part of it is just going regularly.
I think so too. So Srini, can you just finish off by telling us what's the favorite part of this life you've designed now for yourself and this business?
I would say that it's the people I meet. You know, I mean, I've gotten to talk to so many fascinating people, and I've gotten to, you know, make so many amazing friends, and I continue to make friends from every walk of life. And that to me is really cool, because, you know, you get to a point in adult life where that doesn't really happen. We kind of form our social circles, we stick to who we know, but the fact that, you know, this has given me an opportunity to just keep expanding that has been really cool.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck with everything you're doing. And could you just let everybody know where they can find out more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me at unmistakablecreative.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
That conversation was short and sweet, and I think it was really powerful. I think Srini is a very smart guy, who's going some big places, and I just love his philosophy on life, creativity, and business. So let's do it. Let's get to the hack.
That's why when people ask me now, should I go get an MBA? I'm saying, I usually say no, it's a huge waste of time and money. Because the thing is, everything you learn in business school, you could learn by reading a few books. Like, you don't go to business school to learn how to build a business. You go to business school to work in somebody else's.
And that's the hack.
Oh, so beautifully said, Srini. Absolutely. You can. I fully believe that you can. And yeah, you should educate yourself. Read the right books. Listen to the right podcast. Follow the right people. And yeah, you can do amazing things. Business school is, I fully agree, made to get you a job. It's not there to help you create a business. And I'm just so happy that you said that, Srini. So thank you so much for your time. This has been a great show. It's been short, it's been sweet, but I think we really got a lot of good stuff out of it, and I hope you agree. If you haven't yet, please stop by the site, hacktheentrepreneur.com, and get on the mailing list. Sending out an email a week to you guys, my best hacks, and there it is. It's a two-way conversation. You can reply to any emails, and tell me what's on your mind. Ask me any questions. Tell me what you think of the show. It'd be great to hear from you. But until then, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.